Okay, it is Or L'Chaf Zion, Kislev, I think, and the 14th of December, third candle of Hanukkah. And we are on Chaf Beis Amud Beis. We've pretty much wrapped up the proofs in the question of Yiyah Shalom Midas. The Gemara brings a final proof, which is accepted as being a proof to Abaye. Tosus and the Ramaskal Tiyufta, the Rava points out that Rava knew that Brisa, but didn't hold of this limud of Isura Dumya de Hetera. Tosus in the middle of the page says it, so that ultimately is the machlokus between Abaye and Rava, is whether you make a derivation from this halacha or not. But in any event, the Gemara says, V'hilchus ha-kavose de Abaye v'ya'al kagam. The halacha follows Abaye in these six cases. So I just wanted to start tonight with a little bit of Rambam. I made copies, a few packets of the sources we'll do tonight. The Rambam in Perek Yudalet Halacha Hey of Hilchos Gezeila Aveda codifies the upshot of this. It's the first page, should be the first page in the packet. The upshot of what we've just learned. The Rambam says, Yish Shalom Midas, Afilu B'davar She'en Bo Simen Eino Yish. If he's unaware, so it's Yish without Das, even though it's something that has no Simen, meaning even though ultimately he will be Miyash, ain't no Yish, doesn't count as Yish. Ketzad nafal mana dinar v'le yodabo shenafal, it's an example, if money fell, he drops some money, he doesn't know that it fell. Afal pisha chisha yeda bo shenafal yisiyayish, even though when he will know, he will give up. Hareza ain't no Yish, ata ad sheyedu habaylam shenafal. It's not Yish now, until or unless the Baylam actually knows. Avalim Adayin Habailam Omrim Shemon Asativ Laploni or Shema Bemigdalhu. If the owner is still saying, maybe I gave it to so and so, or maybe it's in a chest, Munach, or Shema Teisi Vecheshbon, or maybe I just made an error in calculation, he doesn't think he lost something. Uchiyotzi Badvarim Elu Ein Zayish, or the like, that's not Yish. It is interesting, by the way, the Rambam is talking about where the person is aware that it's missing. But he has ideas in his mind. Why? I can't find my whatever item, but maybe I gave it to so and so. Maybe it's in the chest.
It contradicts the Gemara, straightforward.
What do you mean contradicts? How?
Huh? Because the whole terse Gemara gave on that case was asiyadu l'mashmish b'kisa b'chol shah, and therefore it's not a case of yesh l'midas. It's a case of yesh midas, and you've always come it. And the Rambam seems to say not like that.
Right, he's giving an example of dinner, and we would say that by dinner the assumption is that he does know. Right.
Is there any time limit to this?
So there is a Gemara, if it's been a long time, you can assume.
Okay, I mean, you have money in your pocket, you don't reach in your pocket, you walk into here and you want to put money in the tzedakah box, you reach in and you realize your money must have fallen out. So you immediately go back out onto the street. It has no simon.
Right.
But, and there's a guy on the corner who's sitting there, with a smile on his face, counting out $5 $1 bills, which is what you had in your pocket.
Well, that's more than just a time limit. That's evidence. The Gemara has cases where it's only him and another person. And the Gemara gets a little bit into cases where he has a... actually, when it's two people, he says...
what I'm trying to understand is, he did realize that he lost it. He didn't. When he walked in, he didn't know he lost it. But then, a minute in, he knew he lost it.
Right.
And then he went back
but
out.
But see, for the finder, what matters is what we assume. What matters is not reality. I don't know. If I knew it was your money, it returns to you. It's all assumptions. It's not the reality of what happened. Eitan's point is an interesting one. Here we're talking about money, and the Gemara says money is dafka, an example of something where we assume he would know. It's also interesting because most of the cases in the Gemara are cases where the question is, do we think he's even aware that it's missing? Rambam's talking about he's aware it's missing, but he thinks it's not really missing. I can't find it now, but I gave it to him, maybe I left it here. So maybe it's a bigger chiddush. But my point in quoting this is really for the Magid Mishnah. The Magid Mishnah says something here, which is interesting. We have to see how we reconcile.
Can I ask a question? The case of Chaf Alchman Beis, which says, Hasam Kirkir of Yisrof, Yemar Adam, Asam Mashish, Kisa Koshav Shah, Now we have a mashmash b'kisa b'chol shah shah. So therefore, it's close to Rambam there also. The Rambam must quote that halacha. Mm-hmm. So he holds from that.
Right.
That's perik ach mechuz gzeil levedah halacha ches.
Yeah, why does he give an example of dinner here? I didn't look into.
So it's not like the Rambam's going to argue that.
Right, case. Right. Yeah, right, just, this just seems like a strange example. I don't know, I haven't looked into that, but it's a good ha'ara. The Magen Mishnah on this halacha says, it's again, Perkidal in the Rambam halacha hates on this first sheet. He passed like Abaye because that's the way the Gemara is ruled explicitly in the Gemara. Sometimes the Gemara doesn't tell us what the bottom line is. Here the Gemara literally says, it tells it straight out. V'dat. Now the Magen Mishnah makes the following point. Anything where there is what to be concerned, meaning there's what to doubt, whether the owner knows about its having fallen or not, asur misafek. Is forbidden due to suffek. In other words, not only when I know that he hasn't been miyayish, or when I know he doesn't know about it, it's even if I'm not sure he knows about it. L'fi shesham amru gabi ma'os mefuzaren, hare elu shalo v'akshinan ale, da'abaye, uparkinan adam asad mash b'kisa b'chol shah. Yeah, well, Magen Mishnah is certainly bringing it. What he's illustrating is, well, what are the nature of the questions the Gemara asks? Let's take that one. Abaye says, Yish Shalom Midas is not Yish. What do you mean? Mishnah says, if you find money, you can keep it. Why? Who says the guy knows he dropped it? Answer, no. Rav Yitzchak makes a statement. People are always checking their wallets, and therefore it's assumed he does know it. It's affirmatively assumed. By the time you find money, the guy knows he dropped it, because people check their wallets a lot. There are tshuvas about whether this reality is true today or not, by the way. I remember the Shevet Levi has a tshuva like that. But what the Magen Mishnah is saying is, the question wasn't, I know for sure that he doesn't know. The question was just, maybe he doesn't know. And that's enough to be a kasha and abaye. Right? Because maybe he doesn't know, therefore I shouldn't be allowed to keep it. And we answer, no, he for sure does know. Alma mistam v'dav she'ein litlos aser. What you see is, unless you can make the assumption, you have to assume it's forbidden. De'ilo, because if that's not true, my kushu, my peruka. What was the question? What was the answer? So you see in the Gemara that it's not when we know for sure that it's Yish Shalom Yidah. It's not when we know for sure that the guy hasn't discovered it. It's when we don't know for sure that he has. Okay? Zen nirali v'chol ha-sugi mochachas ken. This is what appears to me to be logical. And the whole sugya, the whole discussion of the Gemara is clear like that. That's the way the Gemara is working. All these questions on Abaye are because how do you know for sure that the guy knows about it? Questions on Abaye weren't, we know for sure he doesn't. So the mere fact that we don't know for sure is enough to make it forbidden in all those cases. Rav Soloveitchik can explain. So what would be the logic of that? Why is it that if I just don't know for sure that he's aware, is it forbidden for me to keep it? He said, because there's a marakama. There's a previous owner. Somebody owned this. Now the question is, do I have the right to take it? This object used to belong to somebody. Now the question is whether I have the right to take it. We have what we call a cheskas marakama, an assumption of previous ownership. In a case of doubt, we go with the chazaka, we assume it still belongs to the previous owner. That would seem to be the logic here. Unless you know for sure that you have the right to take it, assume it belongs to the previous owner. So if I don't know for sure that he knows about it, then it's Yish Shalom Midas, and then I can't, it's at least a suffix Yish Shalom Midas, so I can't keep it. The problem is, if you look, that was in Perek Yadal, the 14th chapter. You look at the beginning of the 15th chapter in the Rambam, which is related to other halachas that we come to in this perek. The Rambam says, "Kol amotzi aveda ben sheyesh bo siman ben she'ein bo siman im matzah derech hanocha asur ligava." Anybody finds a lost object, whether it has a siman or it doesn't, if you found it and it looks like it was placed there, derech hanocha, looks like it was placed deliberately, you're not allowed to touch it. Shema bala hinichu asham ad sheyachzeru. Maybe its owner, the owner, put it there until he returns. He didn't lose it. He put something down. So if you're going to take it, I'm going to pick it up. He has no siman. He was going to come back. But now I picked it up. It's a problem. You'll never get it back. And if it has a siman, it's not quite as bad, because there's a way he could claim it, but I just caused him the whole bother of having to claim it. If I would have just left it there, he'd pick it up, and then he has to go find me. And he has to adduce the evidence. Therefore, it's forbidden to touch a lost object unless you find it derech nefila, which means it looks like it fell, not looks like it was placed. Now, even if he's unsure, lo yada im davar ze avud o munach, he doesn't know whether it was lost or placed. It's hard to tell whether did it fall like that or was it placed like that. It could go either way. Keep the first page though; these two go together. Hareza lo yigavo, shouldn't touch it. Now the Rambam drops. Not yet. If he did pick it up, he's not allowed to put it back. There's a discussion whether that means literally if you just picked it up momentarily, or it means if you picked it up and went away and came back, you can't put it back. But anyway, if you took it, you're not supposed to put it back. And if it's something that doesn't have a simon, so he owns it. He does not have to return. So here's a case where I wasn't supposed to pick it up, but if I did, and it doesn't have a simon, so keep it. That's very surprising. As you have the Hasaga of the Ravid there right next to it, the Ravid frequently points out and disagrees with the Rambam. So if you look at the Hasaga of the Ravid, it says Aleph, that's Amar Avram. That's his name. Davar ze inam achuver etzli. This is not correct to me. She yizka bo la'atzmo la'olam. He should now be allowed to keep it forever. Ela yamud biyado at shiyavo aliyo. It should stay in his hands until aliyo nabiyak will come and clarify halachos that are in doubt or what to do. Meaning, granted, you can't find the owner, it has no siman, but you know how to keep it, you can't use it.
Yeah, somebody's going to be like a gezel, and then because it's somebody else's, if you didn't have to remain.
Yeah, why should I be allowed to keep it? I was once talking to my Rebbe, Rav Kalman Epstein, how long do you have to keep something that you found that has a siman, and he told me a story that he heard it from the Baal HaMaisa, that he went in to ask the Chavetz Chaim this question. The Chavetz Chaim reached into a chest next to him, and he took out some kind of it was something wrapped up in paper, and it was like a little, it was like a notebook kind of a thing. And he said, "Das habe ich gefunden vor bar mitzvah." He was an old man. He said, "This I found before my bar mitzvah." So that's how long he held. You have to. That's why all the public buildings say, you know, items left for more than 30 days, or you know. So he made a disclaimer. It's a real halacha concept. Yeah. Otherwise, you have to keep it lost and found and become the size of your building. it might be some leniency, but the Pashtus is not. But anyway, so where does this come from? The Rambam says, I wasn't allowed to take it, but if I did, I can keep it. If I know chayv, you don't have to return it. The Rambam says, that shouldn't be the halacha.
But then the building will be full of things. I mean, if you have things in the middle, we should not allow to touch it. I mean, if somebody plays it, it's...
Well, you may be allowed to move it.
Is there
at a certain point...
Is this a barabim, or is it, I mean, where is the Rambam that draws the line?
Yeah, because it was derech anocha. Yeah, you're asking another question. Why are you even allowed to move them?
Right.
I'm not sure, but you are. but to sell them, you know, give them away. Some might say you can say, hey, hold on to the money. But the pashtus is the person's entitled to his object. Anyway, but that's the question they all ask. So you look at the Magid Mishnah there. Right at the end of that halacha, right alongside where the halacha ended, he writes Zuba emes kasha bavadi. This is definitely a problem. V'hech yizkevo v'yishalo. How could he merit it and be his? V'alo kodem yish bal yado. Came to his hand before yish. Bein tzarech lo mevada hiniach delav kol kamine lenot lo v'yizkevo. Needless to say, if it was definitely put there, so somebody put his thing there, I shouldn't have taken it. I did. Caused him a loss, really, and now I'm allowed to keep it. Ela filosofik inuch, even in a case where I'm not sure, maybe he put it down, maybe he actually dropped it. Vade lo zochabo da hasfekehu imu derech nefila vezochabo kedin amotz derech shein bo simen oshu derech anocha very bal yelo kodem yeshu sfeke v'chai gavna l'chumra. He says even if it's a suffix, even if I'm not sure if it was placed there or it fell there, I shouldn't be allowed to keep it, because in things like this, in a case of safek, case of doubt, you have to be strict. Ukimo shukasafni perik yud beis biyir shalom midas. As I wrote in the previous chapter, when it comes to Yerushalayim Midas, even if it's suffix, even if we're not sure if the guy knew, you can't keep it. And he says, and the Ravid also raises this question. And he says, that's why the Ramban and the Rashba, they all don't say like this, this Rambam. It says the Magen Mishnah, I don't understand the Rambam. I don't understand the Rambam. Even if it's suffix, you know, you have to be strict in cases of suffix. But if you turn back to the previous page, the Kesef Mishnah, on Halacha Aleph, the Kesef Mishnah, right at the beginning of the chapter, quotes this Magid Mishnah, as he frequently does, and disagrees, or he defends the Rambam. Kesef Mishnah, of course, is the same author as the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo. So if you look at the Kesef Mishnah, the first part of Perek Tesvav there, I'm skipping the heading, but Kesef HaTur Al Zev Elo Nehira. The Torah also disagrees with this Rambam. The Rambam said, if you picked it up, you shouldn't have, but if you picked it up, you can keep it, writes the Torah. It's not true. Let it sit till the Anavi comes. V'gam ha-Rav ha-Magid. Hey, is the Magid Mishnah. So Rav ha-Magid. V'gam ha-Rav ha-Magid, Kosovo de Rabbeinu Zuba Emes Koshevali, right? The Magid Mishnah we just read also says he doesn't understand it. So the Kesef Mishnah will answer for the Rambam. V'ef shalom ha-Ladas Rabbeinu. It could be the way to explain the Rambam is the Hadam reading Bereish Perak Elamitzis to pluk the Bayva Rava be Yish Lomidas, have you the Dava Shain was similar, Ifsika Hilchasaka Bay, the Amir Yish Lomidas, love a Yish, Mishim de Hola Yada de Nafumine, Hainu Lama Shasala Litlan. This whole thing we were learning in the Gemara, that Yish Lomidas is not Yish, is talking in regard to taking it. Avalim Avar Natlan, Zachabahem. But if you did, you got it. Since it's in his hand and he doesn't know to whom to give it back, doesn't have a simon, that's what to put it back. Commotion is bar. We don't say leave it until Eliyahu and Navi comes, except in the places where our sages actually use that phrase. They're cases where the Gemara says, "Hey, munachat sheyav Eliyahu, let it sit until Eliyahu and Navi comes," but the case of Mishnah says, "But in this case, our Chacham didn't say that, and therefore the halach was only you're not supposed to take it. But if you did, it's okay." And you'll notice in his wording, he emphasizes the kevin shehim biyado; it's in his hand. Ve'ini yodei lamiyachzirim. So Rav Soloveitchik wanted to say the machlokus between the Magid Mishnah, who has a problem with this, and the Kesef Mishnah, who endorses this, might be the following. As I said before, the logic of the Magid Mishnah seems to be Cheskas Marakam. You don't. Why did we say now at the outset that in a case of doubt you don't keep it? Because there was a previous owner. Somebody owned it, and you don't know if you should own it. So it goes. It's suffix. In a case of suffix, you go with the Marakam with the previous owner. It could be that the Kesef Mishnah holds a cheskas marakam, an assumption of ownership of a previous owner, is only operable whereby following that chazaka it'll end up in his hand. But here you're talking about something that she'ein bo simen, which by definition means it's not going back to anybody. A chazaka that by following it will yield a result. So then you follow the chazaka. But here there's some unknown person who he has a level of chazaka, and I'm what we call the tofes. I'm the person who's taken possession of it. Possession also carries some weight. Right now it's in my hand. That carries some weight in halacha. So he wants to say, a cheskas marakama that leads nowhere because we don't know who that marakama is. An assumption of ownership of a previous owner that we can't follow because he's anonymous and unidentifiable doesn't work against the, well, I'm the one holding it now, and maybe I'm entitled to it. So that's the way the Kesef Mishnah seems to learn. So then, if you...
Wasn't the Rift the one who said that if you... If the guy comes and he's come across from you, you believe him without a simon, that you give it back to him?
Gemara.
The Gemara says that. Yeah. You quoted this from the Rift, some along the lines also.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it was that's why I was thinking this, because the Rift is the one who says here that... that the guy shouldn't that he agrees with the rival that the guy shouldn't get to keep it. Maybe he shouldn't get to keep it because he feels that it's not always true that it's because there's no simon.
What you're saying is that you can't call it a totally invalid cheskes marakama because it could yield account. Results. It actually could. And again, in case of a Talmud Chacham, which we learned, some of the Rishonim learn a Talmud Chacham is neman for himself, and the Eid Echad is neman about someone else. That was machlokes. How far to take that Allah? Okay, that could be a point of contention also. Yeah, maybe. Now, if you look much earlier in these halachot, this is the sixth chapter. The next page is the sixth parak of Hilchos Gzeilah Aveda. So these are all cases that we saw already in the Gemara. Karos va'avonim va'etzim v'chiyotze b'hen, beams and stones and wood, I guess like lumber, and the like, sheshatfam hanar, that were washed away by the river. Im nisyashu ha'balan mehen harei l'mutar, v'hen shel matzilan. If the owner gave up on them, they're permissible, and whoever salvages them is allowed to keep it. V'im eino yodeya im nisyashu o lo nisyashu, but if he doesn't know whether the owner gave up or not, chayev lahachzir, he has to return it. So, Soloveitchik wanted to say, so here's a case where you don't know, because you don't know, you have to return it. How would the Kesef Mishnah understand this? So it could be answered very well. This is probably a case where we know who the owner is. In other cases of Aveda, we're talking, you find something, I don't know, it has no sim, and I have no idea whose it is. Here, we're talking about some guy's front yard. He had his lumber sitting in the front yard, and a big tidal wave came. Something came along and washed it away. We know whose it was. The only thing is, if it becomes hopelessly washed away, that there's yish, so then anybody's allowed to take it. But if you don't know for sure, I don't know if he was miyayish or not, so the halacha is chayev lahachzir. So the Kesef Mishnah would say, yeah, that makes sense. This is a case where you know who the owner was. So there's a cheskes marakam, which is operable. You don't know if he's miyayish or not. Do you know, does he exist? Yeah, I know his identity. And I don't know if he was miyayish, so then I do have to return it. The cases where the Kesef Mishnah would say, as we just saw in the Rambam, that, you know, the cheskes marakama doesn't work, that's where, because you don't know who he is. Because it doesn't function. But this could very well be a case, in the case of the Gemara, that sounds this way.
Who says this?
This is all of Soloveitchik.
Makes no sense.
Uh-oh. Why?
Ikar chasim in a sefer. Then the rabbi should have said that this is a case where you know who the guy is. I mean, he's up till now we've been talking about cases of Aveda.
Well, this is earlier, actually. This is Perek Vav. I don't know, but I think it might be sort of self-explanatory in the case. When you read the case in the Gemara, Shatfa Nahar Korav Eitzav Avonav. The way I pictured that case is the onlooker knows. I'm watching your beams wash down the river.
You don't think you'd have an obligation to give the guy's beams back if you saw it washed out of his house?
Yeah, you don't. You don't. There may be l'fnimashuras ha'din, but in a situation where all people would be miyayish, really, even I know whose it was. By the way, there are painful tshuvas about property like after the Holocaust, things that were salvaged from, you know, people who were abusive and took possession of things from Jewish homes, but we can trace whose it really was. So the truth is, there was yish on those items. But that was still the right, nice thing to do, right thing to do. But if something was in a situation where it was hopelessly lost, you really are not machuyev. So the way, I mean, I think the way to understand that is Gemara is we're talking about, we know who the owner is, but it gets lost. In cases where you find something, where the river washes it away, what makes the item lost is the fact that the river washed it away, but we saw who the owner was. When you're walking down the street and you find a metziah, it's lost because we don't know who the owner is. So it's a different case than the truth.
I mean, if he's not gonna intervene, it's gonna get lost, right? So I mean, there's some salvageable fees. I mean, if anything.
Right, that's what the Rambam says. It ain't shel matzilan. They belong to the one who saved it.
So for you saving it is you're introducing obligation for the other person. There is a reimbursed fee, if anything, right?
Yeah,
I mean, if nice thing to the return.
Yeah, but since he's miyayish out there from the beginning,
right.
you're not really saving his thing. You're saving the thing he was miyayish on already.
Oh, he miyayish.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why Hein Shel Matzah, the one who saved them from the oblivion, but he didn't save them from the owner losing them because the owner gave up a priori. And I think that's actually very logical. Anyway, that's the way to understand, I think, the machlokas between the Magen Mishnah and Kesef Mishnah. And again, the Kesef Mishnah is really explaining the Rambam. The Rambam, in the case of Yish Shalom Das, is Machmir Misafik. In other cases, he's Mekel, you can own it afterward, and the difference might be.
But in the first case, the Rambam says, do not touch the thing, which it becomes more, you know, it's much more stricter in a sense. And then he says, if you touched it, it's yours. It's.
Yeah, he's learning the whole business about Yish Shalom Das. Right, meaning that the whole thing about
Yishlam. So, what's your violation if you touched it? What do you violate? You violated not returning the item, or what?
Yeah, you probably. Yeah, you are probably in violation.
It's like
of
a Donif more, sort of like that. Basically puts it in the category, but not.
Yeah. Since the Gemara Daf Chavav, can we say you had violation of the Sucha l'Hisalim? I'm not sure.
I can't say you're a Ganav, because if you're a Ganav, you have an obligation to return it.
Right, that's true.
And right. You don't have an obligation to return
it. Right, also, it's a thing that you're really just supposed to leave it. I think you're a Mazik, really. Mm-hmm. It's something the guy was going
to. Your Mazik can have an obligation to pay him back too.
So maybe you're right. So maybe it's not a direct. It's like a grumma. It's like some kind of a grumma and nizaka. If you were going to reclaim something, and I now caused something to happen, then now you can't find it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's 500 identical coats in the coat room. Yours had a little pink thread stitched on, so you could find it. I pull it off and throw it in the garbage. So I made you lose something, but yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't. Here, the guy was going to come back and take it, and I made that he can't find it. I didn't do that in order to be mafsid him. If I did that in order to steal, that's a sugya and daf chavav. Then you're over on l'sigzel and so on. Yes, I think it's one of these cases where you're causing him a loss. You know, there's a whole thing about grumma and garmi. We gave shurman years ago over here. There are cases where you cause somebody a loss of money, but it's not actionable. You know, guy was going to go out to a very important meeting. It's going to be worth tens of thousands of dollars, and I blocked his driveway, and he couldn't get out. He missed the meeting. It's terrible rishus, but you can't sue me. Gemara talks about, you know, you hit his wallet, and he couldn't get the money. Those are all things that cause loss, but they're not direct. Mm-hmm. I imagine it's that, I think. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on a little bit. What happens in the next sugya, in the next line, and for those of you who come to the Shabbos here, we read this already. And just summarize it quickly. The Gemara is like one little addendum to this sugya, and the Gemara says, now that Rava was disproven, these dates, not figs, but dates that get blown off the trees, how do we eat them? There was apparently a practice when dates got blown off the tree, people ate them. How do we eat them? And the Gemara says back, because they would get eaten by the rodents, so the person's meyayish from the beginning. Then the Gemara says, but what about if it belongs to children who are orphans who can't be mochel? So the Gemara says back, you don't have to assume when you go out in the fields and you find dates, you don't have to assume that they're coming from underage orphans. What if you know, says the Gemara, or what if you have the orchard fenced in so that the dates wouldn't be eaten by these creatures? Then the Gemara says they're in fact forbidden. So, we did this on Shabbos. So just to clarify, there's a big machlokas Rashi and Tosfos how to understand this sugya. The Gemara starts off and says, now that Rav has been disproven. Now that Rav has been disproven, how is it that we eat these dates that get blown off the tree? So all the Rishonim asked the question, it doesn't really have to do with Rav being disproven. Based on what we had a page earlier, when fruits fall off a tree, people should assume that they came from that tree. So the owner would not be miyayish. So it's a case where there's no yish. It's not yish shalom midas. It's not yish at all. So Rashi already asked the question. He says, why do you say, now that Rav has been disproven, meaning now that we hold like Abaye, I don't understand how I can eat these fruits. And if you held like Rav, would it be any better? Even according to Rav, you can't take things that people are not Miyayish on. Mm-hmm. Rav just holds when he definitely will be Miyayish, mm-hmm. It's as if he already was. But this is something where he won't be. So why are you phrasing the question that way? Now that we disproved Rava, how do we eat these? So Rashi says something that seems like a huge dochek on the SDIT, which is the Gemara doesn't mean it literally. The Gemara really means it's a problem anyway. It's even more problematic now that we're strict. Now that we're strict and we hold like a baye, it's even worse. But really, according to everybody, you shouldn't be allowed to eat these. And the Gemara answers that now there's yish from the beginning. And but the upshot is, but if it's you're talking about a situation where there wouldn't be yish, either because the owners are underage or because it's protected from these creatures, then it would be forbidden. Tosus doesn't learn it that way. Tosus learns, no, the Gemara meant it literally when it said, now that Rav has been disproven. What the Gemara means is, Rashi is assuming these are things that fell straight off the tree. Rashi assumes the date doesn't fall far from the tree. And Tosu says, no, we're talking about they get blown. It's talking about wind blown. So it's like this. The owner thinks they're falling straight down. But we're talking about dates that get blown a distance away. If he realized where they were, he would be Miyayish. But he doesn't realize. Oh, that's Yishalomidas. That's what we meant. Dates that get blown a distance away because of the wind. And therefore, the guy doesn't know that because he didn't realize it was windy. He thinks dates fall off my tree all the time. They fall straight down. I still intend for people to return them to me. They should recognize it fell from right there. He doesn't realize they fell far away. If he would realize that, he'd be Miyayish. So it's a classic case of Yish Shalomidas. And now that we hold Yish Shalomidas is not Yish, how do we eat these dates? And the Gemara answers, no. He gives up on all of his dates. All the dates that fall off the tree, he's Miyayish on because they get eaten by the creatures. Then the Gemara asks, what about children? Yisomim are lav b'nei mechila. So you don't have to assume these came from such fields that were owned by orphans. What if they did? Then, granted, you're right, then they'd be forbidden. Same thing also true if they were protected from the rodents that eat them. Fine. So we have a line in our Gemara, Yasmei delav b'nei mechila ninu. Yisomim are not capable of mechila. An older person is able to say, I forego. I relinquish my right to something. A child can't do that. He's lav b'nei mechila. So what I want to do in the minutes remaining is... I forgot one source. Alright. We'll do it by heart. I want to talk about this line, first from one of the Achronim on the page, and then from a tshuva, a Rav Moshe Feinstein, about using the lula from last year. Good Hanukkah topic. We're going to talk about using last year's lulav and what that might have to do with this sugya. So the next two pages in the source sheets are from the Darchei Dovid, who's one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Eitz Chaim in Yerushalayim. So right at the beginning of the parak, the third paragraph, if you have the page, it says Parak Eilu Matzias. There's a ritva at the beginning of the parak, and we discussed this a little bit, that says, Yish Shalomidas means he never has to be Miyayish. Don't think Yish Shalomidas means, well, we're going to hear him say later, oh, I give up, I lost my thing. And then so retroactively, it's as if he said that from the beginning. The Ritva says, you never have to hear him say, oh, I give up, I lost. Even if those words never come from, they never cross his lips, he never says it, maybe he never even thinks it, it still works. So asks the Darchei Dovid, the third paragraph, he says, Umisupukani. Umisupkani. I think I said that right. Umisupkani b'mashikasa dafilo nesash b'sof kol. Even if he never is miyayish, what did you mean by that line? He says, it still works even if he was not miyayish. Do you mean only if he wasn't miyayish, which means give up? Imakavano shlo nodol lo b'sof klal o shiyot shiyadiel b'sof ba'inenu b'vadin nesash b'libo. Basically, it could be one of the two things. Do you just mean that he never gave up, but he knew? Or do you mean he never even has to know that he lost it? People lose things they never realize they lost. They go the rest of a lifetime, never remember that he ever had this thing. based on the amount of items and lost and found in our institutions, there are people never, you know. I must have had a winter coat at some point in my life, but you know, like, right, but he never knows. So what did the Ritva mean? Did it just mean that the person, we never heard the person say, I give up? Or could it even be he never realized he lost it, totally forgot about it?
Must have to.
So, because I'm not sure I understand this fully, I think I'm understanding what he means. See, one way to look at it is, we have things in halacha where once you're aware of something, we assume this would be your reaction. And even if that's not your reaction, halacha makes it your reaction. But l'daita itzel kol adam. Most people, when they discover they lost something that has no simon, they give up. Either guy's kicking and screaming that he doesn't. Halacha can impose a mindset upon you. We have that as a rule all the time. But l'daita itzel kol adam. But maybe that presupposes, but it at least has to be that he knows that he lost it. When you realize you lost it, the normal reaction is to give up, so therefore it's as if you gave up. Or are we saying, no, something that's lost, that doesn't have a simon, is hopeless, therefore it's as if you were miayish, even if you never even realize it. Okay? So that's like a step stronger. He says like this, the famous question that the Ravid asked, the Shita Mikvetzis quotes the Ravid, I discussed this in an earlier shir, how is the debate about Yishalom Midas different from Breira? Breira is retroactive clarification. We weren't sure which way you were thinking, then tomorrow when you do X, so retroactively we know you meant X from yesterday. The way you act later indicates what you were thinking all along. So Yishalom Midas seems to be like that. Yishalom Midas saying, since you're going to give up later, it's as if you gave up from now, right? So the Ravid asks the question, says, why isn't this just the same old question about do we say Breira or not? Do we say retroactive clarification or not? And the Ravid is very terse. He says, and a smart person can distinguish between the two. But he doesn't do us the favor of telling us what that distinction is. So says the Darchei David, well, makes a lot of sense. If Yishalom Midas is Yish, even if you never know, then it has nothing to do with retroactive clarification. It's an imposed reality. If you lost something that most people would give up on if they knew about it, even though you never know, halachically it's not yours anymore, that's not retroactive clarification. There's nothing retroactive. I never became aware of it. But, he says, if all the halacha does is it imposes the general mindset upon you, so when you know, when you discover you're missing this thing, since most people would give up under that circumstance, it's as if you gave up, even if you disagree. And then, but what makes it as if you gave up before the finder found it? Right? Yish has to be before the finder picks it up. We discussed that at great length. That's working retroactively. One piece is working that the halacha superimposes the general mindset upon you, whether you have that mindset or not. But what makes that mindset kick in from before the finder came across the object, that's retroactive. He says, so whether or not the Ravid's question is, the kasha fangzach nishtan, the question doesn't start if you go with the assumption that he doesn't have to be aware of it at all. So that is a chakira that he put out at the beginning of the parak. You turn the page, the second to bottom paragraph on the next photocopied page I made of the Darchei David. This is an argamar. Yas me delav b'nei mechila mai. So this is what Tosu says. These are orphans. These are the owners of this field are orphans and their children. Orphans are not capable of das. They, even if they happen to say, yeah, you can keep it, but it's not a maturely thought out statement, and therefore it's not valid in halach. They're assumed not to have das. Lav b'nei mechila, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to keep it. Oh, I should have made this more dramatic. Rabbi Kiva Eger had a question. You'll recall one of the proofs in this whole Yishalom Midas discussion was leket. There's a field, and after the second group of collectors, or after the old people collectors come through, There's two different lashonos there. But after the field has been thoroughly gone through, so anybody is allowed to take the leket. You don't have to leave it for the poor. Anybody can take it. So the Gemara says, beautiful. That's a proof that Yish Shalom Midas is valid Yish. Why? Because what about the poor people the next town over? They didn't see that the people walked through here. They didn't give up yet. So we answer, no, they gave up at the beginning. If I live far away from a field, I say, oh, the poor people in that city got to it. I give up, even though poor people are entitled to all leket, theoretically, but they give up. I'll never get there in time. They gave up from the beginning. Rabbi Akiva Eiger on the side says, wait a minute. Leket belongs to all poor people, including children. The Gemara, a page later, says children are allowed b'nei mechilin, and who children can't forgive, they can't forego. So how actually are you allowed to take leket? If I go to a field that I know people have the poor have already thoroughly gone through this field, but the children who are aniyim can't be mochel. They're not capable of saying, well, we give up on it since it's already been thoroughly scrutinized. So how do I have a right? How does anybody who's not poor have the right to take it? It still belongs to the poor children. Kiva Eger leaves that as a question. Another thing to raise as a question, I forgot to make a copy of this, but
how did it belong to the poor children? Right. Now, when the next poor guy came, he was allowed to take it. It belongs to the poor children. Why is the other poor guy allowed to take it?
So one poor person is allowed to be zoche in it. But before it's been taken by an individual poor person, it belongs collectively to the aniyim.
Really? Because if it really belonged to the children, they could never be mochel in their chelik in it.
Right.
So, then even a poor person couldn't take it.
Yeah, you're asking like, what's the level of ownership that's non-specific? Obviously, any specific aniyim is allowed to take. So I don't know exactly, but I hear what you're asking. But there's some collective right that all the aniyim have that no person who's not poor is allowed to take from. So the question is, adults can be mochel. We gave up. The children can't. Another question is, if you look in the Rambam, and I forgot the exact word, in the Rambam, I think it's Perek Chavtes of Hilchos, Mechira, Lachachas, or thereabout, says that, he basically says a child who has das basically can be mochel. And the Irishonim say it's against the Gemara. The Gemara seems to say Ketanim Lav B'nei Mechilin. So we'll come to that in a minute. I'll show you a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein that I hope will shed some light. But just getting back to this Darkei David for a second here, what Tosfos says is when the Gemara says Yisomim are not B'nei Mechila, and how therefore can you take the fig, the dates that blew off the tree? So Tosfos says that's a question on Rava. I'm sorry, that's a question now that we've disproved Rava. Why? Because according to Rava, it's Yir Shalom Midas. The kid is 10 years old. When he'll turn 13, he'll give up. Oh, forget it. My date's falling off the tree. They're going to get eaten by the rodents. So he'll be mochel. So in the end, he's going to be miyayish. So it's as if he's miyayish now when he's underage. So if you held like Rava, it wouldn't be a problem. But says the Gemara, but now that we disproved Rava, now that we hold like Abaye, and the fact that you're going to be miyayish later doesn't help you for now. So that's why we have a problem. So the Darkei David says like this. He says, if the way Yish works is, when you, I'm not sure I understand this, but I'll say what he says. When you become aware of it later, so since most people, when they become aware they lost something, are miyayish, it's like you're miyayish. And Rava holds it works retroactively, so you only became aware of it later, it's as if you were aware of it now, it's as if you were miyayish now. Then he says that wouldn't work for you. Some they're underage; they can't be miyayish. But if what you're saying is the way it works is we don't ever need your yish. Yish shalom midas works even if you never even realize you lost the thing. You never realize you lost it. When someone loses something that is irretrievable, it's something that people would be miyayish. It's lost. The finder is allowed to keep it even if the owner never becomes aware of it. Then it's not a question of one's das; it's just a halachic reality. So then it would work for Yisom.
Orphan cannot make anything ownerless.
So that's going to be the subject of the rest of this year. There seems to be a big exception to that. But just before I get to this, what he seems to be saying is, but if we need a retroactive das, then it doesn't work. I'm not sure I really understand why. Imagine if I'm a child, incapable of das, but I'm allowed to borrow from my adult self back to the future, applying to my, back to the past, applying to my child self. I don't have das now. When I'll turn 13, I'll have das. So I'm not sure, why can't you say l'mafreya? I mean, retroactive is a hard concept. How does it work, retroactive? Since when I'll be old enough, I'll be able to be miyayish, so it's as if I'm miyayish now. So he's saying, it can't be. You're underage now. Yeah, but I have my adult brain off in the distance being applied back. So I'm not sure I really understand why it can't work l'mafreya also. But that's what he says in this paragraph. Something to think about. Depends a little bit how you understand how things work retroactively. What does it mean to work retroactively? But anyway, he says, if you go the other way, then we don't need it to work retroactively. And the idea is just, anytime you lose something that's hopelessly lost, even if you never even become aware of it, it's gone. So, okay, so then Rava would very well hold that the Yisomim can relinquish their ownership, and it's only a question on Abaye. Let me jump ahead to Rav Moshe's tshuva. It's 1932 in Luban. And Rav Moshe Feinstein writes a tshuva. A lot of Rav Moshe Feinstein's early tshuvas were like real lumbish. These were the Gaonim. His friends were like the towering giants. And they weren't just asking, like, what's the halacha in this case? They were basically talking and learning. But all of Rav Moshe's tshuvas are full of Torah. I'm saying the earlier ones have less halacha l'maisin. They're more like Shir and Gemara. So he did ask, I think that this was a l'mais issue, the lulavs were hard to come by, and sometimes they wanted to use last year's lulav. I don't know how they kept it fresh exactly, but last year's lulav was kept fresh enough. Can I use last year's lulav? So the Shavuot, the Rav Eliyahu Shachar, and his brother-in-law have also communicated about it, raised the following issue. Sometime during Sukkot, I gave it to my child to bench lulav. I bought a lulav, suddenly the first day of Sukkot, I used it myself, but at some point I gave it to my child to bench lulav, and now the next year I say, you know, I can't find a good lulav, I want to use last year's lulav. So the Mishnah Brura does say, and he quotes it here, I corrected it, there's a typo, it says Sifkat Nachav Bez, Sifkat Nachav Hey. The Mishnah Brura says, don't make a bracha unless, if you can't get a lulav, and all you have is last year's, don't make a bracha on if you remember that you gave it as a gift to a child. Okay? Why? Because on the first day, you have to own your lulav. So for last year, who was thinking about it? On the sixth day, my child came over and said, can I do the mitzvah? And I gave my lulav. Oh, now, a year later, now I can't make a bracha on the lulav because I don't really own it. But Rav Moshe says, that notwithstanding, he would say that you can. So first, he goes through things that are more relevant to the halachas of lulav. One is, he says, if it was any day other than the first day, there's no reason to assume that you meant to give it to him as a gift. If a child needs to blow shofar and I give him a shofar, did I mean for him to own it? No, I lent it to him. So on the sixth day of Sukkot, if I gave him my lulav, I didn't mean for him to own it. I lent it to him. When would you assume it was a gift if it was given on the first day? So Moshe says, hold on a second. First of all, you should know there's two opinions. Mr. Brook has two opinions. When we say in the first day you have to own your lulav and esrog in order to do the mitzvah, does that apply to a child doing the mitzvah of chinuch? One school of thought in the poskim is, yeah, when you do a mitzvah as a child, you have to do it the way it would be kosher as an adult. You don't give a child a lemon instead of an esrog. You don't give a child a lulav and esrog that he doesn't own. You have to own it. I have to own mine. So if you want to do the mitzvah as a child, as chinuch, you also have to own it. And that assumption would work well with the language of Chazal, which they say in the Gemara and Sukkah, don't give a child your lulav on the first day before you were yotze, which sounds like, why? Because if you give it to him, he owns it. We have a halacha he can take, but he can't give, right? But Rav Moshe says, wait a minute. He raises a few issues. Among them, he says, a person has more than one child, and he wanted them to be yotze the mitzvah on the first day, which he says, that's common practice. So how is the second child yotze? You're talking about the cities, they probably had one loophole whole city. So he gave it to the first child. I did my mitzvah, and now I gave it to one child. Now he can own it. Now how does the next, if a child can take and can't give, how does the next kid come to own it? Plus, we in Chutz Laretz, so the second day you have to own it too because it's sacred yoma, so how can I give it to my child on the first day? What am I going to do on the second day? So Rav Moshe basically says all these things seem to indicate that we don't paskin that way. We follow the opinion that for chinuch, he doesn't have to own it.
Don't we give him a talent at the half seima?
So it doesn't work for a kid.
That would also work for the same reason.
Yeah. I don't remember, is that the problem of Lachem? Or is that, whatever reason, it doesn't work.
The Lachser part presumably doesn't work.
Yeah, I think he can't give it back, right. So Rav Moshe says, all of this seems to indicate that when we give it to a child, we're assuming I'm keeping it, I still own it, I'm letting my child use it, and that's good enough for the mitzvah, which is the way many poskim hold it, initially like that, stipler. But then Rav Moshe says like this, says, even if that's not true, and even if when you gave it to the child, he really did own it, it's still okay. Ah, Rav Moshe, this is great. And then he gets into the concept. He says, I know everybody thinks a katan can't be mochel. He can't give something away. He doesn't have the das to give away. Says Rav Moshe, I don't want to belabor it too much. It's a long tshuva. But he says, like, there's two categories. There's some instances where the child's actions don't indicate that he's given this thing away. What you need is his das. You need is his intention. You need his mindset. Where that's the case, so a child can't give something away. But, he says, I'll tell you where he's coming from. It's also a Gemara in Sukkah, Mishnah in Sukkah. The Mishnah in Daf Mem Hei in Masechet Sukkah is talking about what we call Hoshana Rabbah, the seventh day of Sukkahs. And it says at the end of that Mishnah, it's talking about what they would do on that day, Yom Chibur Arava. So it says, Miyad Tinokos Shomtim Nesulavayim Venotanes Rogayim. They would take the lulavim out of the kids' hands. It's the last day of Sukkahs. We just did a mitzvah. All of a sudden, they used to grab the lulavim away from the kids. And Rashi says, Mishum Simcha. He uses another word also. It was like part of the levity of the day. They would start chopping lulavim away from the kids. And says Rashi right there on that Mishnah, and there's no problem of theft because this was the minhag, Mishum Simcha. This is part of the custom. So most of part of the custom. Part of the custom works, you have adults. There's adults, and this is what we do. This is the minhag. So there's an assumed mechila. You all submit to the custom when you come here. So I grab away your lulav, it's part of the game, and you are mochel. You are mochel because that's the custom. But a child is la b'nei mechila now. It doesn't work. So Rav Moshe basically comes away like this, and I'm not sure how he chooses where this applies and where not. But Rav Moshe says, it's not true. A katan can give something away. He can't give something away where what you're relying on is his mindset. You're relying on his statement. But where the actions speak louder than the words, where it's obvious that he's giving it away, then it does work. And he takes us right into the machlokas between Abai and Rav. If you look on the second... not going to really take time to read through all this, but and by the way, at the end of the first bolded paragraph, he says that I believe I heard this from Rav Pesach Pruskin, whose Chiddush Manshas we have was Rav Moshe's Rebbe in his youth, and he learned a lot of lumdas from him. And the way he said it works, and I've quoted other Achronim who explain it this way: when somebody loses something, the fact that it's lost really relinquishes ownership, but it has to be hopelessly lost. The problem is, the Torah comes along with this mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda and makes it not hopelessly lost. If we lived in a world devoid of Torah, so you lost something, it's hopelessly lost, that's it. You don't own it. But then the Torah comes along with its frumkite and says, no, people are supposed to return it. Oh, so now it's not hopelessly lost. But then Yiyush does away with the obligation of Hashavas Aveda. So when it's lost, and then you have Yiyush, so nobody's going to do Hashavas Aveda, now it's fully... finders keepers. So Rav Moshe says that's Rava's lumdus. Why does Rava hold that even though the person didn't have yish at the right time, it still works? Because according to Rava, yish isn't what makes you own it. The fact that I quoted a similar thing from Rav Soloveitchik earlier in a different shir. The fact that it's lost, a lost object belongs to whoever finds it. The problem is yish sort of. I'm sorry. Hashavas Aveda inhibits that. Because it's when things are hopelessly lost that finders keepers. Hashavas Aveda says, no, it's not hopelessly lost. So when a person is miyayish, you don't have that obligation. So Rava says, so the yish can be later. The yish doesn't have to be right now. The yish can be later. As long as the what's the reality? I just lost something. Am I going to go looking for it now? No, because I don't even know I lost it. How about when I discover that I lost it? No, because I'll have been miyayish, and therefore nobody's going to return it. So the reality is that it's hopelessly lost, and therefore you can keep it. Why does Abaye argue on that? So he has two ways of explaining Abaye, which we sort of went through both of these possibilities. But Abaye holds you need the yish in its time. It's not enough to have it later. So if you skip to the last paragraph on the second to last page, if something is lost, even from children, it is hefker. It is since Rava holds the mere fact that the item is lost makes it relinquished, and it's just that you need that it, the yish is just to take off the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. So the reality is when these kids get older, are they going to give up? Yes. So is there destined to be any Hashavas Aveda here? No. So the finder can keep it. But according to Abaye, first he has a little question on Abaye, but basically according to Abaye, no, you need the yish to be from the beginning. I don't want to get too complicated here, but what he says based on all of that is the following yesod, that ketanim can give something away, but only where it's obviously so. Where you're relying on their statement, when the facts don't seem to look like they're giving it away, and you're relying on their statement, then it doesn't work. But when the facts of the case make it clear, then ketanim can give something away. So on the last page, he writes, basically, a kid takes a lulav at the end of Sukkot and throws it somewhere, it's hefker. Even though I gave it to him on the first day, and even if my mindset on the first day of Sukkot was, this is yours. By the way, Moshe would hold, you can, not only can you use your lulav that you gave to a kutton to make a bracha on the first day, you can take the kutton's lulav next year. One year there's a shortage of lulavim. You go looking around, you find in your garage a lulav you bought for a kid last year. You bought it for a little kid. Since after Sukkot, he said, I'm done with this, and he left it somewhere. It's hefker, and you'd be allowed to take it. And the next paragraph, he says, L'chein nicha masha gedolim shomtin me'aktanim. The fact that the adults would take it from the children, because since there's a minhag that everybody does it, the facts of the situation are such that there's an assumed yish, so the yish of ketanim does work there. The mechil of ketanim does work there. So Rav Moshe says that that's why you'd be allowed to take the lulav, even if you gave it to a kohen, even if you meant for him to have ownership. So it's funny, Rav Moshe in this tshuva doesn't get into what sources can be reconciled based on this, but it seems to me that could be the answer to Rabbi Akiva Eger's kasha. Rabbi Akiva Eger wants to know, how can you take the leket? We said, well, once people have been through the field a couple of times, or once the careful older people walk slowly, been through the field, so everybody's miyayish. Yeah, everybody can be miyayish, but not the ketanim. But based on what Rav Moshe is saying, any case where everybody, the custom is that people give up, then it works even for ketanim. I'm pretty sure, that Rav Moshe would say, and this would answer Rabbi Akiva Eger's question, and maybe because it's a tshuva and not a shir, he didn't want to get into it. And also I mentioned that the Rambam seems to say that ketanim can be mochel in some cases. I think Rav Moshe probably said that's what the Rambam means also. So the idea that ketanim lav b'nei mechila ninhu is not an across-the-boards concept. There are major qualifiers in that. Now you might ask, but the case where the Gemara does say is talking about stuff that falls off the tree. Well, and you say, well, everybody gives up when fruits fall off the tree and they're going to get eaten by the rodents. Everybody gives up, so the ketanim should be assumed that the ketanim give up also. Ramosh addresses this himself. He says, it's your own field. It's your own field. If you want, you can go out there and reclaim those fruits. So I'm too lazy, I don't always feel like it. But it's something that's very much within my control to salvage. When it's within one's control to salvage it, there isn't an assumption that everybody would be miyayish. You do need that mechila, and that only works for adults. But when it's clear from the circumstance that everybody is miyayish, then even ketanim can be miyayish also. All right. Freilich and Chanukah.